Awesome. How is everybody? Good. You ought to be great. This weather is absolutely amazing. I came from Wisconsin. We have been having a brutal, brutal winter. But true story, all over social media today, my friends are talking about how finally there's been a relief. People are outside loving it. One person was actually talking about sweating. It's 40-some degrees. So I don't know how you can't just totally appreciate this. This is just great, great, great weather. I know last week you launched a brand new series called Home Improvement. And Ben laid out some great scripture foundations for how do you deal with the messiness of families? How do you deal with the complexity of families? And so today what we're going to do is we're going to zero in and we're going to get very, very specific in dealing with the topic of parenting. Now, out of curiosity, how many empty nesters do we have in the room? Any empty nesters? Oh, you guys are all smiling. Yeah, that'd be us, of course. How many of you here would be boomerang parents? Your kids left, but now they're back. Oh, yeah, I knew there'd be a couple. I knew it. Any grandparents in the room? Any grandparents in the room? Well, it is good to have you with us. I know you've been up since 4, so we will try to keep this abbreviated. And then, of course, there's certainly a lot of people who say, I would love to have kids, and we've been praying, and our prayer for you is that you would have kids if that's your desire. Others of you, you've had them. How many of you are newer parents? Just less than 2 years, maybe. Sucker? Yeah. Yeah. Good to have you as well. And of course, there are people who say, I don't have kids. I don't want kids. I don't even like kids. And we like to sit next to you on the airplane. Regardless of where you are at in this whole parenting spectrum, I think today's going to be beneficial for you. Because what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some practical principles that apply to everyone unless you're a hermit, right? Unless you just say, I like being in the house and the only time I get out of the house is when I go to church. Hey, good for you. I don't want to be your friend, but good for you, right? The rest of us, we interact with kids on a somewhat regular basis, even if they're through nieces or nephews or grandkids. And so we're going to deal with some great principles. And I think it's important as we launch into this today for me to just say something that weighs very heavily on me when it comes to this topic, and I know it weighs heavily on a lot of you. This is a very emotional topic because I think all of us go through seasons, and it may even be a long season, where when we start to think about all the expectations of being a great parent, we feel guilty. We feel like, man, I'm a failure. This is a true story. Last time I actually did a talk on parenting at the church I pastor just south of Milwaukee in a city called Kenosha, Wisconsin, about an hour before I gave the talk, I was made aware that my two daughters, who are teenagers, are having a massive war of words on Twitter for the world to see. And so I had to step in and say, girls, please, I'm doing a parenting talk. At least it'll make me look a little bit decent here. And there is something, I think, in all of us that tends to feel a little bit guilty. And there are times that we just step back and say, you know what, as I evaluate being a parent, I gotta tell you, I don't know what the heck I was smoking when we decided to have kids. Of course, if you live in the state of Washington, we know what you were smoking, right? You know, there are people who say, man, I don't know what I was thinking. Why didn't somebody sit me down and tell me? And yet, the truth is, if somebody would have sat down and talked to you, and they would have said, hey, let me just give you a warning. Let me just let you know that you could have 3 kids and they're going to have 3 very different personalities. Let me tell you, you think they're going to sleep great all the time and it's not going to happen. Let me tell you, when they get to the teenage years, as great as they may have been in their elementary and middle school years, they're going to take on some more independence. I just don't know that it would have been possible for us to truly understand or appreciate the difficulty of parenting. And so again, if you're a parent, I want to free you from guilt today by simply making this statement. All we can do is our best when it comes to parenting. The rest is out of our hands. All we can do is our best. The rest is out of our hands. Your children, just like my children, are independent. They're going to eventually do their own thing. We do our best. The rest is out of our hands. That being said, I know it's still easy to feel guilty because growing up, most of us probably can think of a family or two that we would have said, oh, I wish I was in that family, because they look so idealistic, right? You just look at them and think, my, what an awesome family. Or maybe you look to some of your relatives and thought that they had a great family, or maybe you built something up in your imagination because you watched Leave It to Beaver, or you watched The Cosbys, or The Dumpies, and you say, man, everybody looks like they have fun. Everybody looks like they're having a good time. Why doesn't my family fit into that? And if you're a really spiritual person and you love God with all your heart and you're praying all the time for your family and for your kids, there's something in us that thinks, man, it ought to look very, very different than it looks right now. And if we're not careful, we're going to build up an idealistic picture in our mind, and then we're going to try to force all of our family members to conform into that picture. I did a quick Google search this week for family pictures. Here's one that came up. It is certainly the quintessential American family. You've got two great-looking parents. You've got two great-looking kids. Make the assumption that they're the biological kids, and you look and you just say, man, that is a typical American family. Except for the problem is they're not. Because according to the latest studies, less than 25% of married couples are living with their own biological children that they had together, which means 75% of families don't look like that. And so to hold on to this traditional family picture in our mind is going to just end up in disillusionment and disappointment. Now, let me show you another picture that popped up in my Google search for family photos. Right? Another quintessential family. Of course, that's it. That's what we're all trying to be. That's what we're all trying to achieve, except for that picture doesn't tell the whole story. What that picture does is it tells a story of a moment in time. It doesn't show you that Billy has ADHD and it took him 15 minutes to settle down enough to take that picture. It doesn't show you his sister who's got Asperger's. It doesn't show you mom who got some sort of twitch because the family's drowning in debt and she doesn't know what to do about it. The dad's a pharmaceutical rep and he's hooked on Oxycontin. No, we don't see any of that stuff. All we see is this moment in time where everybody looks picture perfect. And yet we think that's what our families are supposed to become. And so if you set your family up to fit into some sort of idealistic photo, I'm telling you, you're going to be disillusioned and disappointed. And quite honestly, you're going to waste a whole lot of critical years trying to get everybody to become something that really is unfair and unachievable. And so let's talk about a couple principles that I think we could all walk away from today to make us great parents or great grandparents or great aunts and great uncles. The first is this: great parents accept a flawed picture of their families. Great parents, great grandparents, great aunts and uncles, they accept the flawed picture. They just say, yep, this is us. It's messy. Now, I grew up in what you would call a stereotypical family in regards to our appearance, all right? I am one of seven kids. So it's Scott, David, Todd, Mark, Katie, Richard, James. There's seven of us. And my parents got married when they're young, so we're all their biological kids. They've never been divorced. We went to church three times a week. Yeah, Jesus Jr. right here. We went three times a week, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. On top of that, my parents had us memorize large portions of scripture. I mean, this was the family I grew up in. Now, fast forward to today. We're a family with all the messiness of any other family. Divorces, tension, craziness. I said to my mom probably a year ago as we were sitting around the dinner table, because we do these family dinners every other Sunday. Everybody goes there with all the craziness that happens, and we bring all our kids, but we do a family dinner every other Sunday at my parents' house. And I said, Mom, I'm not trying to be offensive, but I think we're a pretty dysfunctional family. And she does this big sigh. You know what I've learned, Dave? Every family's dysfunctional. I thought, you know what? That's true. Every family's dysfunctional. If you were to say, you know, Susan, would you go back and do it again? All the craziness, all those, she'd say, of course I'd do it again. Maybe not with the same kids, but yeah, I'd do it again. You know, she's come to a realization, as have I, that every family has its issues. And if we hold on to idealism, our kids are never gonna flourish, and our kids are never gonna feel accepted in love for who they are. God has shaped your kids. Every one of your children have gifts and abilities and personalities. They have spiritual gifts that God's given them. They've got talents. They are unique. You can either work against that, or you can try to identify those things and say, man, I want to fuel those things in their life. And here's what I think life has taught so many of us. That stubborn, strong-willed child that we say, man, I have no control over them. They drive me nuts. They drive us nuts now. But fast forward 20 or 30 years, and they're a person of conviction. And they're a person we admire because of how strong-willed they are. Right? That child of yours who doesn't color in the lines and it's always driving you nuts, fast forward 20 or 30 years. It's possible they're going to be winning awards as an innovative business leader. That seven-year-old who can't sit still worth anything, who knows, they might grow up to be a multitasking executive. The kid who is always starting projects but never finishing them, just start here, start there. Who knows, they might end up being one of the great entrepreneurs of this area. And so instead of wasting a bunch of emotions and a bunch of energies trying to fit our family into some sort of mold, and specifically our kids, why not try to identify how God has shaped them and say, I'm gonna do my best to fuel who they are. There is a verse that my wife and I have held on to as parents for several years. Now, it's probably been our theme verse as parents. It's out of Psalm chapter 90. It's a prayer of King David. Here it is. It just simply says this: teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. That's it. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Translation: you're gonna die sooner than you think, so you better make your time count. Now, we as a nation are obsessed with numbers. You know this is true, right? Powerball numbers, what's everybody doing? Pulling out their tickets. Ben's got all 15 of them spread out, and all of a sudden they're calling these numbers, and we're obsessed with numbers, right? Most of us have scales in our bathrooms. We step on the scale, we wanna know where we stand. If we go a little bit higher than we were hoping, what do? We cut off on ice cream for a little bit, and we say, okay, I'm gonna step back for the next couple weeks, and then I'll get back into my old habits. But we're obsessed with numbers. That's why Guinness Book is one of the great selling books of all time, because it's filled with numbers. Just out of curiosity, does anybody know how old the oldest person was to ever father a child? And no, it wasn't Larry King. 96 years old. It was a guy out of India. Just fascinating, right? We love numbers. We count and track and measure with numbers. When it comes to birthdays, what does everybody say? You're a year older. You made it. Happy birthday to you. Everything turns into a big celebration. But the one thing we're not really all that good at when it comes to tracking numbers is considering the amount of time we have left. We're not real good at counting down numbers. And so as we step back and we begin to think about our responsibility as parents, we ought to consider this in light of the fact that my kids aren't going to be in my house forever. In light of the fact that they're only with me for a limited amount of time. God, I want this to be my prayer. Teach me to number my days, that I may gain a heart of wisdom. Help me to make the most of the time I have with my kids. Teach me to number my days so I may continually be thinking, how do I do a better job in these limited years I have with them? And the reason that's such an important prayer is because you know this. Eventually, all the time that we have with our kids is going to be used up. It's going to be spent. So we might as well be asking, what's the best way for me to spend it? And the truth is, we already know the answer. Because if a doctor told you, I've got horrible, horrible news, you have 6 months left to live, all of a sudden, your time would be spent in a way that aligns with your priorities. We already know what our priorities are. We already know that we value our kids, right? We know that. But when a doctor gives you a death sentence of sorts, all of a sudden, those priorities begin to surface to the top. So we know how to do it. I mean, every year on the news, we see some very moving and emotional story of a mom who was told she's got a year to live or 6 months to live, and what happens? She starts journaling for her kids. She starts putting together a video diary. She said, these are the things that I want you to know. These are the things that I want you to value. But unfortunately, because we don't live with that kind of awareness on a regular basis, we often look back and feel like we've wasted years. We let way too many of them go by. And so the question I have is, if you don't have some sort of death sentence, how do you become more intentional about numbering your days? I have a visual with me today. All right, a bunch of marbles. I thought being with TSA PreCheck was gonna be awesome and get to go through quickly. No, they had to stop me and had to figure out why we had all these marbles. All right, 936 marbles. That's what they are, 936 marbles. Anybody have an idea of why we would have 936 marbles? No. No, here's why. Because 936 is roughly the amount of weeks you will have with your child from the moment they're born to the moment they leave your house and go off to college. 936 weeks. And so you look down here, and these are basically your poopy diaper years and the crawling years. Then you get up here, you've got the toddler years and the preschool years. You get the elementary years, the middle school talk back at you years, and then the high school years. And these are the years where your kids are learning to drive and they're totally learning to form friendships and be free thinking and independent as an individual. This goes by like that. And I know that because just yesterday I was holding my baby girl, Caitlin, and was spending time with her and thinking about all the time we have together. And then just a couple weeks ago, she celebrated her sweet 16 birthday party. And right now, we're on a father-daughter trip. I brought her out here with me this weekend, and time flies by. It's like we blink, and it's gone. Now, my wife and I, and this may sound a little odd to you, but my wife and I actually have 3 jars, one for each of our kids. And every single week, my wife and I will take a marble out of each of those jars. We'll pray for our kids. And as you can imagine, it's a very emotional thing. Now, it's not like, woo, I mean, some weeks I put my hand in there, so I'll tell you how many weeks you have left, kid, you know? But it is emotional, because when we take it out, it's saying, man, I can't believe how much time has gone so quickly. And yet it does, it moves quickly. Back in 1984, a 20-year-old kid by the name of Terry Wallace was in a horrific accident. His passenger that was with him in the car died. He was put on life support, lots of wires hooked up to him, and he was put into a coma, and then his mom had to make a decision of, do we keep him on life support or not? And she decided that, yeah, we're going to keep him on life support. I can't even imagine a mother or a father having to make that kind of decision. The good news is he did come out of the coma. The bad news is he came out in 2003. I don't know. Maybe I don't call it bad news. Maybe I call it stunning news. That means he was in a coma for 19 years. For 19 years. And when he comes out of the coma, he thinks it's 1984. He still thinks he's 20 years old. And so he's carrying on these small conversations, and it's obvious he doesn't understand what happened. Now think about that. He slept through 2 decades, 4 presidents, 2 of them who had served 2 terms. He slept through 2 space shuttle crashes. He slept through the Columbine massacre. Michael Jordan's entire career. Al Gore inventing the internet. Computers and cell phones were everywhere. 9/11 had taken place. When he went into a coma back in 1984, New Kids on the Block were a sensation. When he came out, they had become old men on the curb. Now forget 19 years. We know lots of things happen in 19 years. Just think 19 months. I mean, our world is evolving so quickly. Experts are saying that in just a few years, driving cars are going to be everywhere. Self-driving vehicles, not driving cars they have now, right? Self-driving vehicles. I'm still convinced I'm going to be scared if I see Pastor Ben behind the wheel of one of those things, right? They're going to be everywhere. 3D printing's already becoming common. It's just amazing what happens with 3D printing. There's always the debate between Apple and Microsoft, and I get it, and I understand that. But man, think about these companies and how quick products evolve. You look at just Apple products, right? I bought an iPod Classic back in the day, and then they had the Mini, and then the iPod Touch, and then the iPod Nano, and they actually got to the point of an iPod Shuffle. I'm convinced they're about to come out with a suppository iPod, right? That's the next bit. You just have to shake a little bit. Music will be coming out, right? I want God to teach me how to number my days so I may grow in wisdom. I have 936 weeks with my kids. 936 weeks. I want to make the best of them. So great parents, they just decided, I'm going to accept a flawed picture of my family. Another thing great parents do is they help their kids grow up. They help their kids grow up. They don't allow them to remain dependent and childish their whole life. Do you know historically there have only been two stages of childhood or of life? Childhood and adulthood. But somewhere in the early 1900s, we came up with a third stage called adolescence, the teenage years. Now, it's crazy as nobody can really agree on when somebody actually becomes an adult, when somebody goes from childhood to adolescence to now they become an adult. In most surveys, in most polls that are done of when does somebody become an adult, they say the answer is when they have their first child. The problem is most people don't have their first child until they're 27 and a half years old. So that's when they're becoming an adult, right? It kind of brings light to these humorous pictures that you'll see from time to time on the internet of childhood photos that have been recreated by the same children, but when they're adults. You seen these things? These are just awesome, right? I got a couple of them. Here's another one for you. Yeah, you look at that and you're like, that's just fun. Here's a third one. This is probably going a little bit too far. They had to just recreate it in the bathtub. Yeah. But at some point, you need to embrace the fact that your child has to become an adult, fully functioning, responsible, and you need to fuel that process. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, when I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. I put away childish things. We need to encourage and help and support and fuel this with our kids. There's lots of teenagers who spend the most critical years of their life downloading free porn and racking up a bunch of credit card debt and gossiping about everybody they can see and posting it on social media. There's a lot of guys in their college years who try to determine how many beers they can pound and how many women they can conquer and how long it's going to take them to get through their undergrad. And as parents, we need to be their biggest cheerleaders of saying, hey, I'm going to help you become responsible. Now, I've done some things with my parents that my friends have questioned. Some of it probably hasn't been the smartest. One of the things that I did when my daughter, Caitlin, was 14 years old, she wanted to go to Chicago. It's an hour away from where we live. I said, hey, if you can figure out with your friends who are also 14 how to get to Chicago, what time the trains go and everything else, go to Chicago. Just keep your phone on so I can track you, you know, because I do want to know where you're at. And so sometimes I go a little bit extreme like that because I want them to grow up. But at 12 years old, one of the things I did with my kids, I've got two in that who are older than that now. At 12 years old, I stopped paying for everything. Everything. You want clothes for school? Pay for it. You want to go on this trip with our church? pay for it. And I didn't feel bad doing that because with our kids, we've always given them chores that are just part of life, right? Hey, you're in our house, you're going to do chores. But we also give them the opportunity to have jobs. You'll get paid for this. You can vacuum the vehicles. I know you're not supposed to do this on your chores right now, but you'll get paid. Here's the amount. And it's always amazing how many times they just sat back and avoided the jobs until they needed the money. But it's something we started when they were young. And let me tell you something. It's been amazing as they've learned to save money and be prepared for the future. Another thing that I decided in helping our kids grow up is I wasn't going to be a yelling parent. And I was going to just let the consequences do the screaming. And so I've been a really relaxed parent that way. I learned it from my dad. My dad was always kind of like that, just calm, easygoing. He just let the consequences do the screaming. One year I went to prom, brought my girlfriend, and he said, "Hey, Dave," he said, "you are a senior in high school. Your girlfriend's younger than you. And I think as a gentleman, you need to have her home by midnight," which quite honestly, I still think is way too late. I don't know that any good comes after, you know, after you're done with an event, but you need to have her home by midnight. And I came walking in the house about 1 a.m, and he was sitting at the kitchen table. And my heart started beating really fast. And he said, "David, what time did you have the girl home?" He didn't care that I'd come home at 1. He said, "What time you had the girl home?" "Dad, about 15 minutes ago." "Huh. What time did I tell you to have her home?" "Oh, Dad, come on." He said, "Here's the deal. You just own it. I want you to go and talk to her dad tomorrow and just apologize that you hadn't talked this through with him and you hadn't even discussed the time. And maybe he thinks that's a little late. So why don't you go deal with it?" And I remember that next day going in to this father and at his job. I showed up unannounced at his job and I said, "Can I please talk to Mr. Houston?" And he comes out and I'm shaking. I said, "Mr. Houston, it is not responsible of me to get your daughter home as late as I did. I apologize." And he said, "You know what, Dave? Of all the young men that I could want dating my daughter, I can't think of anyone better than you." No, he didn't say that. I wish he did. I wish he did. No, he just said, "You know what, Dave? I'm not going to make a big issue about it, but I thank you for coming in here." And I actually talked about this with him recently. I stopped dating his daughter long ago, but I said, "Do you remember this? How nervous I was?" He says, "I do." He said, "I tried to make it easy on you," but there's something about helping our kids grow up. Another thing about being a great parent is great parents realize they can't control their kids, but they can influence them. They can't control their kids, but they can influence them. You can't control your grandkids. You can't control your niece, your nephew. You think you can because you grounded them for a week. But in reality, there comes a point when we just have to step back and say, all I can do is influence them. And three key relationships, we'll move through these fairly quickly. Three key relationships that all of us should be focusing on to influence our kids. The first is this: influence them in the relationship with God. Oh, I bet you knew that was coming. Dave, you're a pastor. Of course you'd say that. But here's my question. What other option is there? Do you want them to go through life without considering God and making God a part of their worldview? Because your kids are eventually going to have to make some big decisions. Who am I going to marry? How am I going to parent? What am I going to do with my resources? How am I going to use my time? What am I going to do for a career? And God is either going to be part of that equation or he's going to be absent in that equation. In the nation of Israel, when you study the first half of the Bible, it was just an assumption that the parents would pass on godly principles and scripture to their children. In Psalm 78, we read these words: "We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders." So let me ask you, what are you doing to advance your child's relationship with God? I had a mom during a Q&A series. We did it a series, which is always scary that people can just ask any question. And some mom says, "I do not force my teenagers to go to church because I don't want to turn them off to God. What's your view on that?" And I said, "Well, I don't have a whole lot of time to think about it, but here's my view. First of all, it sounds like they're already turned off to God if they're not showing up, right? Secondly," I said, "you only have 18 years with them roughly in your house. for them to begin to develop some sort of understanding about God. I said, at 19, they're going to be doing their own thing. So why not consider bringing them and saying, you know what, as a family, we're going to go to church. Well, the next week, those kids show up. They're twins, 16 years old. They said, did you tell our mom she had to pray? I said, I didn't tell your mom anything. I said, I gave your mom some thoughts in front of the whole church, but hey, good to see you guys. Those two young men have become some of our most key volunteers in our church. They've got a deep love for God. Deep love for God, but it's because they got in the environment and they had an opportunity. Now, it could have worked out differently, right? They could have walked away, but at least they would have had the opportunity to make a decision. The risk is not dragging kids to church. The risk is not living a consistent life in front of them. Now, this may sound intimidating, but it's true. You are the most important spiritual influence in the life of your children. You're the most important spiritual influence. Certainly, church is huge. You begin to develop another kind of community, and they're partnering with you, but if each of these marbles represent 1 week, that's 168 hours. If each of these marbles represent 1 week, 168 hours, and you bring your kids, let's just say to church, one time each week for an hour, roughly, okay? In 18 years, six marbles. That's it. This is how much the church has them. This is how much they're in your house. You are the most spiritual, the biggest spiritual influence in their life. Second key influence we have with our kids needs to be with us as parents. We need to influence them in the relationship with God, but we need to influence them in our relationships as parents. So what are you doing to enhance your child's relationship with you? Proverbs 22 says this, direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it. Now, to be fair, this is not a promise. It's called a proverb. It's a principle. It's saying most of the time, this is how life works. But it is not a promise. All we can do is our best. The rest is out of our hands. I think that as much as we believe what I'm about to say, it's very, very difficult to live it out, and that is this. The tendency for parents is to make their kids experience rich and relationship poor. We know that relationships are everything. I think we know that, right? The greatest currency that we have with our kids is time. That is a bigger currency than anything else. Like, time is what matters the most. Now, I believe experiences are great. Every year, I do an individual vacation with my kids. Like I said, my daughter Caitlin's with me right now. This past fall, I brought my son Jaden on a vacation. We actually went to a really space shuttle type thing up in northern Wisconsin, and we made a map. That's important, but here's what I know. The root of almost every problem that kids and teenagers experience is not a lack of experiences. So give them lots of experiences, build memories with them, but that's not the root of many problems, right? You'll never hear anybody say, it all started when I didn't make the eighth grade soccer team. That's why I'm got the struggles I've got today. No one says, my problems began when I didn't get into the college of my choice. Or the reason my marriage is struggling is my parents didn't let me buy brand new clothes. Or because I had to go to public school. Or the reason I don't get along with my boss is my dad made me drive a used car. In other words, all the things that we get so passionate about as parents and want to give to our kids, those things are great. But ultimately, they need the investment of time. The third key influence that we need to care about is outside influences. And we don't have the time to get into this in detail, but let me just ask you this. What are you doing to influence your child's relationship with those outside your home? At the start of last year, I asked my daughters this question. I said, if you could have anybody spend time with you as an adult, that you like them, who would they be? And each of them gave me three names. And then I called up the three names they gave me, and I said, I know this is going to sound really weird, but I'm going to ask you in this next year, would you take a day to invest in my girls? Would you bring them down to Chicago? Would you bring them to your work with you? Would you? Because they identified you as an adult that they actually look up to. And all the ladies said, yeah, we're in. We'd love to. And my daughters have had these ladies pouring into their life, saying the same things I tell them, but when I tell them, it's just stupid. When they tell them, it's like, ooh, that's good, yeah. Proverbs chapter 13, walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get in trouble. Your kids are going to be influenced in critical areas. The question is, are you going to be intentional about it? What are you doing to advance their relationship with God? What are you doing to influence and enhance their relationship with you? And what are you doing to impact the relationships outside of your home? Let me pray for you.